Good morning, CHD. Welcome to Pediatric Perspectives. This is where we are looking at children's health challenges with a different perspective, one that includes critical thinking and one that's not afraid to give you the honest truth. We have very important special guests because of that requirement. And today, we're going to cover the Defender. I want to highlight this online, most relevant online journal, I think, in the world, covering CHD, COVID, big pharma, tech, chemical, energy, food, and legal aspects. Of course, my segment is focusing on pediatrics. We're in the medical world. And my guest today is Bob Sears. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
It's so great to have you. For the audience, I just want you to know, I am asked all the time, where do I go for good information? And especially regarding vaccines, it's so difficult to know where to go. Well, one place I always went to from the time this book came on is Dr. Bob Sears' book, The Vaccine Book, which you just edited in 2022 to include COVID.
Yeah, it's been my life's passion to inform people, Paul, and give them an objective look at vaccines so they can make an educated decision. And as you know, vaccines are always changing. The diseases are changing. They come out with new vaccines. Yeah, so I've been very happy that I've been able to update my book along the way, and including adding a whole entire new, I think, 25 page chapter just on the COVID vaccine alone, so that people can get up to date information.
Thank you for doing that. My other chief resource is actually The Defender, and you might go, what? Well, it's searchable. So I get questions all the time. I'll take an example, HPV. So human papillomavirus that's been supposedly linked with cervical cancer, but the vaccine is one that's fairly problematic. And so patients ask, or before, I'm retired now, I don't diagnose or give medical advice, but information, where do you get it? You just go into the Defender and you click on HPV vaccine and boom, you've got a wealth of resources with hyperlinks. It's incredible. I mean, you'll learn that the HPV vaccine has no effect in reducing cancer rates and that vaccination is actually associated with an increased cancer rate. What? That's crazy. What do you think about that, Bob? Just to hit you off the top with something kind of obscure.
Yeah, you know, HPV vaccine is super interesting, Paul. What I find fascinating is the one of the obstetricians who helped research and did early development on the HPV vaccine and was involved in testing it and seeing how well it worked on her patients. Because you know, that's the kind of doctor that would deal with HPV issues is an OBGYN. And even she came out online with videos explaining that this vaccine was not researched properly in a way that really demonstrated whether or not it prevented cancer. And that's the whole purpose of the vaccine. And even she admitted that we did not achieve that in our research before the FDA approved this vaccine. And the other thing that I find interesting about this particular disease and vaccine is this disease is completely preventable, Paul. And a lot of times you think maybe a vaccine is going to be really important if the whole population is completely at that disease's mercy. Say we have no way to prevent a certain infection and we want a vaccine to help protect us from it. That's worthy of consideration. But when you have a disease that is 100% preventable through making smart life decisions, then that vaccine in my book literally becomes less important. In fact, young adults out there, you have to practice, safe sexual practices, your whole adult, young adult life, and you have to prevent, HIV infection, other sexually transmitted infections, HPV, hepatitis B. You have to prevent all kinds of things. So if you're making smart decisions of preventing all of those infections, then you're also going to be preventing HPV. So if you're going to make smart decisions, you wouldn't need this vaccine. So that's another thing I tell the teenagers in my practice when they're asking me questions about this is you're not at this disease's mercy like you are maybe some other infections. You can make smart choices. And this particular vaccine, Paul, has a not a very good looking side effect profile.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Side effects that just can be devastating to poor young teenagers, especially teenage women, Paul. And so yeah. You have a risk profile that doesn't look good for a completely preventable disease. To me, parents need to consider that before they give their teenagers this vaccine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I never carried that vaccine in my office because I just saw that it was highly dangerous and so ineffective. And then I had two teenagers, just what you're describing. They were both girls, top students and athletes, who came into my office with difficulty walking and neurologic stuff, weird stuff. They were really struggling, brain fog as well. And after months and months, they've seen every specialist in town. I finally just baffled. I asked one of them, "You didn't get any vaccines, did you? Because there was nothing on my record about vaccines." And she goes, "Oh yeah, I got the vaccine, the HPV at school." The mom's mouth drops open. "You what?" She didn't know. And this happened twice. And just devastating their health. It was ruined. Which, you know, that's just another whole story, which actually, let's segue into that, because the Defender had an article recently about parents were taking on the Philadelphia health officials to overturn a law that was allowing kids to get vaccines without parent consent, which is exactly what happened to these two girls in my practice. And I don't know, do you have similar laws in California? And what do you think about kids as young as 11 being able to make health decisions without their parents' knowledge?
Yeah, Paul, we do have a law in California that allows children to seek medical care. I think it's 12 and older, for any issue regarding sexuality or sexually transmitted infections. So any HPV vaccine, any type of, you know, OBGYN care, teenagers in our state are entitled to that kind of medical care without their parents' consent. And when it comes to vaccination, yeah, I very much oppose that for the very reason that you just said, Paul.
Yeah.
Sometimes when there's a complication and the parents don't know that their child got vaccinated, that can delay the appropriate medical care. Plus, honestly, teenagers, for the most part, are probably not being given the proper informed consent when it comes to being vaccinated against HPV.
Yeah. I mean, we have a hard enough time spending a half an hour with parents to go over a proper informed consent, the real risks and the negligible benefits oftentimes. And we know the kids aren't getting that. And so there's all that peer pressure for them to conform and, you know, yes. Don't you want to do your part for society? And here's some free donuts. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? What they did, they showed us with COVID. That's just something horrible. So I want to pivot to something that's also been in the news and covered. Do vaccines really reduce other infections? I mean, you have a practice that's largely unvaccinated. And so I would guess if vaccines were preventing infection and you have an unvaccinated population, you must be seeing a lot of infections.
And I am not seeing a lot. I certainly see some, Paul. Of course, I think everyone sees a lot of flu every year because the vaccine doesn't really prevent the spread of the flu. It just makes maybe the elderly feel a little less sick when they catch the flu. But you see a lot of flu, of course. I see whooping cough because that vaccine does not prevent transmission either. I see some chicken pox still. I see some cases of pneumonia. I see rotavirus, of course. But I can say, Paul, I have not had a single patient in my 25 years of pediatrics be what I would call harmed by any of these diseases. Every case that I've seen of a vaccine-targeted disease that a child caught and they were not vaccinated against it, every single case I've seen, they've all been mild or easily treatable. I've had to have a few kids go into the hospital where they needed, you know, IV antibiotics or needed some hospitalized type of treatment, but they all did fine. No one's been harmed. And we're talking 25 years of pediatrics, Paul, where in the office in the three county area, you know, LA County, Orange County, and San Diego, and then four counties, you know, the Inland Empire where I live, I get, you know, tens of thousands of patients from all over these four counties. Mine is the office where they come to if they don't want vaccines. So I'm seeing all the unvaccinated kids. Not a single harmed child from an infectious illness in 25 years. Yeah. And to me, that I'm so blessed by that, because that would be tragic if I had, you know, a patient that was severely harmed. But to answer your question, if unvaccinated children were going to be dying left and right from those diseases, I would be seeing it, Paul. You yep. would be seeing it. We both right. would have been seeing it our entire careers, and we're not.
Right. So what we are seeing, folks, is plenty of vaccine injury or vaccine effects, because this is the other thing. The establishment, the pediatricians, I don't think they're aware, or at least most I don't think are aware, of how chronic disease in general is associated with being highly vaccinated. But you're right. I didn't see a single death from a vaccine targeted. I love the way you use that, because we often will say vaccine preventable diseases. Well, most of these diseases are not prevented by vaccines. The vaccines are not, as you pointed out earlier, doing much on that side of things. We are seeing all the side effects. Before we're done, we're going to chat. Don't click off, folks. We're going to chat about how to protect your child if they need to be hospitalized and how to choose a trustworthy doctor. But before we get to that, also in the news, and this is something that really caught my attention, so the Defender covered this, malaria vaccine for babies in Cameroon. They're the first country there in Africa to roll out a malaria vaccine. Now, a little background on my experience with malaria. I grew up in Africa. I was 4 years old when my parents moved to Rhodesia at the time, now Zimbabwe, and my dad caught malaria on one of his trips. I did a medical vaccine campaign, of all things, when I was in medical school. A team of us went into Sierra Leone, way into the interior, hiked up into the mountains, and we were giving polio. And every single person we encountered in Sierra Leone had chronic malarial infections. I mean, it was a big deal. I got to palpate spleens on just about everybody, because with malaria, you get an enlarged spleen. So the thought of having a vaccine that perhaps could, you know, stop that kind of suffering, because they would have fevers every other day and just feel miserable and just begging for Motrin or Tylenol or some way to get some relief, I would be all for it. But here's the problem, folks. They've been trying to get a malaria vaccine for quite a long time. And so they're rolling out GSK's version. I like the name. It's clever. Mosquitorix. Yeah, let's get rid of that mosquito. The problem is it doesn't get rid of the mosquitoes. They're all flying around carrying malaria. And that vaccine, I pulled the package insert for it. It's at best 30% effective, which is, in a vaccine world, that's basically ineffective. You will not even make a dent on the malaria that's going around. And of course, they're only targeting babies and young children. So everybody else still carries malaria. The mosquito bites the person who has malaria and transmits it to the next person. Make matters worse, the vaccine gives protection for a very short period of time. Months is what it looks like from reading that package insert. And then the really scary part, no safety studies that really matter. And it looks like chances are there'll be increased all-cause mortality. And that just speaks to the problem with vaccine trials in general. Anyway, Bob, I'm just curious if you have a thought about that, thought about vaccine trials.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have lots of thoughts about vaccine trials, Paul. But, I don't really speak much towards malaria, because that's a little outside of my wheelhouse, as it is for pretty much every U.S. pediatrician. So I'm glad to hear your experience on it, Paul. What I find interesting is some of the vaccines we use here in the United States for infants were approved with little to no safety or even efficacy research in children. In fact, the best case example is the flu shot. This just kills me. When the FDA first approved the flu vaccine in children, and I saw that very first product insert that described the research, 25 children were studied. Given the flu vaccine and were studied for efficacy before the FDA approved that vaccine for children. And once they did that, then it's, you know, off to the races and they can run with it. People assume that there's a lot of research done on something before it's approved in children, and that is often not the case. And it's often not the case with our own FDA. And I think people need to do their own research when it comes to scrutinizing how the FDA approves these things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we move on to those hot topics at the end, speak a little bit. You've written a vaccine book and done an update with the COVID chapter. COVID changed the world, I think, for a lot of people, and hopefully it woke up a lot of people, because the fact that the CDC ended up recommending that vaccine on the childhood schedule, adding it to start at 6 months of age, with what data? You've studied this. What's going on? What do you think? What should parents do about the COVID vaccine? Because if they listen to the news, they're supposed to rush out and get it.
Right, right. Well, how long is your show, Paul? I could talk about this all day. I'm going to say several things. First of all, in my vaccine book, how much I love the Defender is I actually put Children's Health Defense as a resource in the COVID chapter, because I said, hey, things are constantly changing with COVID. And if you want to stay up to date, here's one of the resources that I love that will give you the latest headlines and the new anything new you need to know when it comes to COVID or the COVID vaccines. It's Children's Health Defense. So I greatly do appreciate them. What I find shocking, Paul, is still in 2024, the FDA has not approved any COVID vaccine for children under 12. Yet the CDC has placed it on our recommended vaccine schedule for every child 6 months and older. Now, this isn't, 2021 or 2022, Paul. We're now in 2024. The FDA has had years now to evaluate this vaccine in children and come up with either an approval or no approval, but it still just exists under emergency use authorization with no full FDA approval. And I would like to ask, how the CDC feels like they can put it on their schedule without that approval, given how much time we've had. And I don't know the answer, to that question. Maybe you know, but I guess I'm just putting that out there to the audience as another reason why you need to do your own research. You can't always trust what the FDA or the CDC are going to tell you when it comes to vaccine policy, because they don't always do their research on this stuff.
Yeah. I watched some of the ACIP meeting where they were making this decision. So within the CDC, they've got a committee that basically is supposed to study and then make recommendations. And you and I have watched this every year. It happens. Each year they come out with a new pediatric schedule. And I was just horrified that they were rubber stamping this COVID jab for six months and up with no safety data, absolutely none. And in fact, the data that was presented was very carefully done to exclude all the harm we now know exists. So,
Right. And it's interesting. If you look at the data they published, they're now saying the fatality rate in COVID for children is about one for every 100,000 children. So thankfully, very low fatality rate. But the published risk of myocarditis and pericarditis as a side effect is about one in 10,000, right? Yeah. So you're accepting a vaccine that's going to give you a 10 times higher risk of having a severe life-altering cardiac side effect, to protect you from a disease with one of the lowest fatality rates of all our infectious diseases when it comes to children. So that's why parents really need to look at the risk versus benefit and make their own decision on this.
Yeah, I agree. And because we're going to run out of time, I want to pivot towards something that's become, I wasn't aware of this really until COVID. How do we protect our children if they need to be hospitalized? I have seen situations where kids go into the hospital completely unaware that there's any risk in walking through that ER. And what ends up transpiring is horrible. What's your take? What are you doing in your practice to address this issue?
Well, Paul, I would agree with you that a lot of my patients really fear that scenario. They're so reluctant to go to the emergency room. And they ask me, should I tell them I'm not vaccinated? What do I tell them? And I always tell them to be honest. But, Paul, I would love to hear what you have to say, because I too feel like my patients are at the mercy of the hospital doctors and medical staff and the hospital policies, because once they step into that ER, they're out of my hands. I'm, you know, even though I have privileges at some of the hospitals, I'm still not their doctor once they enter the hospital. Yeah. And so I've kind of felt that they are a little vulnerable, and I always will talk with the doctors there and try to make myself available to speak with the doctors. And I'd say maybe that's perhaps the one thing parents can do, is if you have a doctor such as myself or an open-minded doctor who you've trusted, who's been following you all these years, have that doctor get on the phone with the hospital doctor and open a two-way, you know, line of communication so that the hospital feels better. If the hospital knows you're in the hands of a doctor who will see you and be involved in your care, then they feel much better about the choices. Yeah. If you walk in there acting like you don't like doctors, you don't trust doctors, and they think, oh, well, do you even have a doctor? Now they're even more worried about you. Then that could lead to some more challenges for you. So I think have your doctor communicate effectively with a hospital so they know you're in someone's hands. And now, even though I have different vaccine policies in my office and most of my patients don't vaccinate, I still will come across as a completely regular mainstream doctor, you know, because I am when it comes to a lot of pediatric issues and pediatric medical care. I will present myself that way to the hospital staff. We'll have a colleague-to-colleague discussion. And if that hospital doctor can have a nice colleague-to-colleague discussion with your doctor over the phone about your medical care, then they will feel much better. And I think that's probably the key, is having your doctor willing to have that communication with them. Because I'm not like a granola eating, never any medication type of doctor in my office, nothing wrong with granola. But really, I'm like a regular classically trained doctor. I do things, in a mainstream medical way for the most part. So I know how to have that conversation with that hospital. And so your doctor would be able to do that for you as well.
Yeah. So the trick is finding more Bob Sears in the country, because you're absolutely right. We need to have our main doctor, or at least a doctor who knows our child, who can play that role that you play, that keeps the hospital team from just going rogue. The other thing I would add to that is don't go alone. So, the hospitals, if they learn you're under vaccinated or not vaccinated at all, there's a lot of bullying that goes on. You and I have seen this in our practices, the stories that come back. But if you go with somebody who's versed enough in this whole topic and can be your support person, really, you don't want to be alone against the whole team that just keeps coming in and hammering you. And if you have a good doctor, you can often stay out of the hospital, period. You can even stay out of the. So that's the other thing, stay in close contact with your provider. I'm sure you've kept many a person out of the ER by just being available to walk them through their concerns.
Yes. And I also tell my patients, don't have a vaccine argument with the hospital staff. It's not like you're going to convince them you're right. You're never going to convince them. I tell my patients to respectfully listen, say, thank you for that information. I'll definitely consider it and consider it, take the information, listen and say, thank you for, bringing this to my attention. I have more to think about. I will definitely, think about what you're telling me. I'll talk more with my doctor about it. And, because you're not in the hospital because you didn't vaccinate. And most hospitals probably wouldn't even give you vaccines while your child is severely ill, at least anyway. So it's not like you're going to be faced with that decision in the hospital. So you really don't have to come to any conclusions with the argument. You really just have to be a respectful, patient, treat your medical staff with respect. They'll treat you with respect, hopefully, and tell them that you'll honestly consider, the information they're giving you.
Yeah. Good
you just
reminder.
Have to play that game.
Good reminder. We need to be respectful. Last question. We're going to wrap this one up. How do I choose a trustworthy doctor? If I'm looking for a pediatrician or pediatric care, what thoughts do you have on that one?
That is a great question. Paul, I feel like there's there's a shift in medicine that I'm sure you've seen, where a lot of doctors such as myself are no longer operating under medical insurance contracts, because I honestly couldn't survive as a business person trying to provide great pediatric care under insurance contracts. So when I took myself outside of insurance contracts, I was no longer beholden to them at all. I no longer had to shorten my medical visits or limit the amount of time I could spend with people. I wasn't trying to meet their, you know, healthy children 2000 guidelines, you know, trying to make sure all their patients are up to speed on their vaccines. I was able to just make, you know, wise medical decisions with the family without the business aspect to it. So I would say, for the most part, even though a lot of pediatricians and doctors out there who don't take insurance, a lot of them probably do really promote vaccines and like giving vaccines, and they like following the CDC schedule. But I would say, for the most part, they're also going to be more open-minded people who are more there to serve you versus the other way around. You know, if you're seeing an insurance doctor, their mindset is, oh, well, you know, they're a customer of the insurance company, you know, and I'm kind of working for the insurance company. So, you know, they're kind of there to be my patient. Whereas what I like to see is, I'm your doctor outside of insurance. I'm here to serve you, and I'm going to respect you and honor your choices. So I think, you know, for the most part, if you find a doctor outside of that insurance machine, you probably get a lot farther, but you're after going to be willing to pay for that. To understand, you have to pay a little more for good medical care, but honestly, that's what you're looking for, and you'll probably be glad that you did it.
Yeah. Now, you make a good point. My office took insurance, and that created all the problems I had, because I wasn't meeting quality standards. I mean, you're supposed to have all your two-year-olds fully vaccinated by age two. You're supposed to have 70% of your teenagers have gotten the HPV vaccine. Ethically and morally, I couldn't do any of those things. So my vaccine rate wasn't zero, but for fully vaccinated, it was pretty close to zero. So you lose all sorts of financial incentives, and you get dropped from certain insurance plans. It's just a spiraling business-wise, you can't do it. So I like your idea. Find people who are not beholden to pharma, and they're not beholden to insurance companies. But for those of you watching who just economically you're stuck with the insurance you have and you have no extra money in your pocket, this thought I have, and you can add to this if you have an idea, make some phone calls. I mean, you may have to call every single office that's within 60 miles driving distance from where you live to find an office where they will allow you to have full informed consent and to make decisions for yourself, as opposed to kicking you out. So you just call and say, do you kick people out who don't vaccinate? If it's yep, you have to vaccinate, next, on to the next call. Right. So there are people out there that are navigating this, and you just have to look.
Right. And other great resources would be, for example, midwives in your area would likely know who the go-to pediatrician is, you know, where you live. You can ask them. You could look at like holistically minded parent groups online or on social media and ask those groups who they're seeing in their local area, who's open-minded.
Yeah. Your book used to have a list. Has that stayed up to date?
That list is still there, Paul. It's okay. they can find that list on my website. It's semi up to date. It's basically a list of we call it vaccine friendly doctors, basically people who have emailed me over the years saying, hey, you know, I give vaccines in my office. Maybe I like vaccines, but I'm open minded about it, and I'm willing to see patients who are looking for a doctor who at least, you know, will be open minded. So they could check it on my website. Sure. Certainly.
Awesome. So that'd be another place to start, and just start calling the offices that are near enough to you and see if indeed they will allow you to do whatever it is you want to do once you're informed. Bob, I thank you so much. You get the last word. Is there anything you'd like to say to the viewers here?
What I found over these years is writing is really a great passion of mine, as it is of yours. You know, I love, you know, some of the books you've written, you know, the addiction spectrum. That was a great book. That was
thank you.
I read through that and found it very fascinating. Of course, I love your vaccine friendly plan book. A lot of yours almost is like a whole baby book about how to raise a baby naturally, you know, with some vaccine information added in as well. So I appreciate that. I've found writing is probably what I like doing even more than spending time in the office. And so over the years, over these last few years, I've written more books and in the vaccine arena. And so people can, you know, check them out on my website, of course. But, you know, one of my favorite ones is actually a fictional book all about vaccines. It's called A Tale of Two Sides. And Paul, you're actually one of the stars in that book, I will say. One of the main pediatricians in there. I kind of tailored him a little after you. Didn't give him the same name, but you can probably guess who it is. And then I've actually just finished polishing off a new book, which was super fun to write. And I think I might be calling it Dr. Bob versus the Medical Board. Ah. And it's a fictional account of the last 8 years of my life. And it had to be fictional because I wanted to present a whole world of what the medical board was like and all the forces kind of working against me, because I don't know what they're doing. You know, you and I just know our side of the story, but I thought it'd be a little boring just trying to tell my side of the story. So I have like my side of the story intermixed with a fictional account of what a medical board might, you know, go about doing to take down a doctor such as you or me. And you're in that book too, Paul. So yeah, you're welcome. But yeah, that's not out yet, but it'll be on my website and people can look for it. And you should write a book like that, Paul, if you haven't already.
No, I haven't. And it's a full book for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Bob. You are always a wealth of information and knowledge, especially in this area of vaccines. And thank you for your courage to do everything you do and continue to do to inform our world about what's actually going on.
All right. You too, Paul. Keep it up.